What is up? Welcome to another edition of the Utilization Report Debrief. I am Marcus Grant, joined by Dwayne McFarland. And Dwayne, we are, I would say, in the off season. You and I were talking before the show, like, we love football, but it feels like there's plenty to do before football comes around. So I'm sure we're all kind of enjoying the not football portion of the year. Is that fair to say?
Yes, I enjoy the journey. You know, I love the football season when it gets here. But I'm not in a rush for it to be here. And it's not because I don't love it. But, like, you know, we've got the rookies, which I'm researching right now. We'll start releasing content around that here in the next few days. You know, then we get the actual NFL draft. We get the landing spot. So it's like one of those deals where I used to be in more of a rush, like when I wasn't like a content creator. Like, I was really, I loved all the parts, but I was just ready for the season to get here. Like, when the season gets here, I will be ready. But right now, it's like I'm learning to just enjoy each different part because it gives us something different to do. You know, and when you come out of the season and you write about, you know, the week every week, like, you know, by the time you get to the end of that, it's just nice to have a little bit of a change. We embrace that. We love that. But I enjoy the change.
No, I've told people that at this point I've been doing this for so long that I'm sort of like that, you know, that 10 or 12 year veteran who knows just enough, you could do enough just to get your body ready for training camp, right? Like, you don't just completely, you don't completely let go. You still kind of work out and you're still getting, you know, your necessary work in. But, you know, it's not like you're 22 and you're in your second year and you're going really hard in the off season. I've sort of figured out, you know, how to enjoy the off season while still staying ready for the season to come. So, we have plenty to talk about on the show today. Last week, we talked about Dwayne's top 150 and some of the guys who moved in the rankings. Today, we are taking a little bit of a 30,000-foot look as we go through what the market is saying about a lot of these players in terms of their ADP. Broken it down by positions, quarterback, running back, wide receivers, and tight ends. And kind of an individual look at some guys who maybe have moved in the last few weeks or so. Since people really started doing some best ball drafts. So let's start, Dwayne, with the quarterback spot. And I know you've looked at this from a big picture view. What was your big takeaway from what you've seen in quarterback ADPs so far?
Well, you and I, we've done one show earlier. I want to say, like, maybe it was mid-February. And we just talked about, like, the very first ADP trends. And still, guys, this is such a cool thing that we actually have living, breathing ADP, actual people sitting at their computer, putting money on fantasy football. God bless you all in February to give us this information, because we used to have to wait, Marcus, until August to really have good information. And even then, like, you don't know how serious these leagues are, all that kind of stuff. Like, you know, look, I get it. Some of these are $5 and $10 drafts, but people are invested, man, and they care. And market information, like, we never want to ignore it. You know, we can sit here and do all the research and everything we want, but I think that the market has to be an input into what you're doing. I look at it as any kind of market that's out there, like whether you want to talk the stock market, whatever it may be. It's not that the market's always perfect, but there's no way I can be as informed as every drafter out there. Right. Like, there's just no way. Like, I think I can find edges against ADP in some areas, and we'll talk about some of those. But sometimes, man, these are reality checks for me, Marcus. I step back and I go, okay, I'm not as high on that player. Why? I didn't move this player down my board, but ADP is moving down. And just, it's just it's like a litmus test, right? Yep. And sometimes my answer is, you know, I think I'm actually going to go against ADP. I do want to stay here. Here's my reasoning. But then there's other times that I'm like, you know, I really don't have a great reason for having him here. Probably I should move him down. So starting there, man, just ADP, having this much information is great. But, like, for the quarterbacks, like, the macro trends that we're seeing, like, if you want to start with what we saw in 2023, remember, you and I talked so many times last year about how quarterbacks were going higher than ever. Mm-hmm. Well, they're still going high, but it's chilled out big time. So QB2 to QB8 is down 13.5 picks versus where they were going last year. Now, the backup quarterbacks or the QB2s, they are going sooner. Quarterbacks 9, I know that's still a QB1, guys, but I looked at the cuts for where the data changed, and every one of these players, not just one, we're not averaging in some guys moved up, some guys went down. Every one of these players in this band was up. QB9 to QB24 going 5.3 spots sooner. So, like, high level, Marcus, it's like, okay, people are probably seeing things in that mid QB one range and the QB2 range that they like makes them more comfortable letting the early QBs go and let them fall down the board a little bit, right? So the very top quarterbacks are going a little bit later, but then after that, like, the pace really picks up around them. And then if you look at just this versus what we saw in February, the top four quarterbacks really just continue to fall. And so that is Josh Allen, Jalen Hurts, Lamar Jackson, and Patrick Mahomes all are down even further than where they were in February. So those very top end quarterbacks, people are willing to let them fall down the draft board a little bit more. But once they're gone, you can't wait around too long. Then the other guys are going pretty quickly.
Yeah, and I feel like it's probably a combination of a lot of things. And I know we'll talk about running backs too, that there are some running backs that I think people are getting excited about early. But I also feel like this is the natural evolution of, you know, for years, right? We were all about the late round quarterback. Look, the great J.J. Zacharyson has built his whole brand around that, right? And then moving on to, hey, we're going to get an elite guy. You got to go early for him. And now I feel like we've sort of settled into that medium range of, hey, like, I'm not going to necessarily go and reach extremely to get an Allen or a Hurts or what have you, but I also don't want to wait too long to get a quarterback. So I think we've kind of hit that middle portion of the target.
Yeah, it's like, and that's back to the market stuff, right? We're always testing boundaries, like how high can it go? And then there's a reaction based on what happened. And part of what happened was last year, the people that took the super early quarterbacks, they didn't kill them. They still put up the fantasy points, but they didn't have the same advance rates that they had the year before. So people are also reacting to, well, 2 years ago, like, you really had to have the elite quarterbacks. Last year, if you invested in them, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't like that cinched you into your fantasy playoffs. So I think, like, some of it is based on analysis, you know, and then there's just the natural ebb and flow, to your point. And now we're kind of landing somewhere in the middle of between where those two things were in the past. I still think, ultimately, if you can get the dual threat guys, they're always, from this day forward, they're probably still going to go pretty high in drafts. Like, how high every year, probably going to be a little bit different. But I do feel like there's a clear cut line once you get past those guys, which, Marcus, like, this is your part of the job, but I just thought I would tee you up for a great transition to the first guy we got to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you talk about dual threat quarterbacks. There's Anthony Richardson, who we were super excited about last year. We saw glimpses of. Unfortunately, he got hurt early in the season, ended up missing the majority of the year. But that doesn't seem to have dampened the excitement, Dwayne. I mean, I think we all got that little taste and everybody's excited. And it seems like everybody is still very much in on Anthony Richardson right now.
Yeah, I mean, when you have a quarterback that's going to score over 22 fantasy points per game, I don't even have the exacts in front of me anymore, but it was a lot. I think it was more like 26.
Wow.
In the games where he played, I think the threshold I have was like 80% of the snap. So I think there were three or four of those. So it's a small sample, but he checks the boxes, right? This guy is going to run the ball a lot. He's also a bigger quarterback, so he's probably going to score a lot of the touchdowns. Like Lamar Jackson, you have the upside to get the 1,000 yards rushing. But with Anthony Richardson, you could have the 800-900 yards rushing, but you could get 10 to 12 touchdowns. Like, he is a much bigger dude than what we have with Lamar. So he's kind of a hybrid between Lamar Jackson and what you have in a Josh Allen, you know? So he's a very interesting player, obviously still needs to grow as a passer, but he's up five picks. He's now pick 58. He's the QB5. What are your thoughts, Marcus? Do you feel good about clicking on Anthony Richardson as your QB, as the QB5 off the board ahead of names like Joe Burrow?
Yeah, I am not so bold. I appreciate the vision. I see the vision. I appreciate the vision. I am not aligned with the vision. Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely a lot of upside. I get that, right? We want that rushing upside. And I think, to your point, the idea of getting 8 touchdowns, 10 touchdowns out of your quarterback, super intriguing. And I think people do look at him, especially his physical frame, and get Josh Allen vibes out of it. The difference is we've seen Josh Allen elevate himself as a passer too, so that you get those passing numbers. And while I think that it's possible for Anthony Richardson, we haven't seen that yet. That was always the question mark from him coming out of college. What was he going to be as a passer? So QB5 feels like the ceiling, and I'm not ready.
He's ahead
to
of Stroud now. He's moved ahead of Stroud. He and Stroud have flipped. That's where it gets a little tough for me, just how elite Stroud was last year. But I do understand the thesis. Again, it's back to that dual threat nature. The only quarterback right now that's in the top five that doesn't check, like, the true, when we say dual threat, it's not that these other guys can't run, but you know what I mean, Marcus. We're talking about the guys that could give you 600 plus rushing yards on the ground, you know, and you know, you get the upside to score 10 rushing touchdowns. And Patrick Mahomes is the only one that's up there that doesn't have it. So from that standpoint, I get it. Like, why Richardson might even be, you know, the guy that should be going right after Lamar. But to your point, like, we just, it's not as well proven. And I thought CJ Stroud, just if we're looking at, hey, we want to catch lightning in the bottle, I thought he had an even better rookie season and we got a bigger sample.
Yeah, I think the I guess if you're going to make the argument against Stroud, I use that term advisedly, is that because he doesn't run quite as much, you are sort of relying on that efficiency passing. You're relying on a good touchdown interception ratio. So I can see the argument, but I'm not there yet. I'm just not there yet with Richardson. But he is up, ahead, you mentioned, ahead of Joe Burrow. And obviously last year, the issue with Joe Burrow was just health. Right. I mean, the calf injury early in the season really slowed things down. Eventually was lost for the rest of the year. But it appears that everybody is back in believing in a healthy Joe Burrow, even with the cloud over T. Higgins. Dwayne, I'm surprised that people are still very, very high on Burrow right now.
Well, I think they were a tad low. If you think back to our first show, Joe Burrow was one of the guys that we talked about as standing out as being a value at the time. You know, a quarterback that was just going too late. Now, he's only moved up six spots, but he's moved ahead of Dak, which I think he should be ahead of Dak. Mm-hmm. And now he's nestled in like right behind CJ Stroud and between Dak, but he's still going 14 picks after CJ Stroud. Like, that feels too big to me. They're both kind of the same archetype. They're not going to run a ton. They're going to throw, they've proven that they're good passers, but Joe Burrow even more so, right, than CJ Stroud. I think you can make an argument that really Burrow should be going ahead of Stroud, or Stroud should be going a little bit later than he's going now. And then that puts us into a predicament with what we just said, like maybe he should go over Anthony Richardson. That's the fun with ADP when you start trying to move all these chairs around. You're like, well, which is it? Well, maybe Anthony Richardson shouldn't be going quite as high either. But the biggest thing for me is Burrow. Like, this is a guy last year, you know, Marcus, that, you know, was in the top four, and now he's sitting in the top seven. I feel like if T. Higgins is back, and even if he's not, he's still got an alpha with Ja'Marr Chase. But I do agree, having two really good weapons is definitely better than having one really good weapon. But I feel like Burrow behind C.J. Stroud, like, I don't know. Like, I still probably feel slightly better about Burrow. I like both quarterbacks. I want to pick both of them. Mm-hmm. But my gut says 14 spots apart in ADP is probably a bit much for Stroud and Burrow.
Well, and I think, again, with Burrow, it's longer sample size, right? I mean, what we saw out of C.J. Stroud was very good. We've seen Joe Burrow do it over multiple years. And so I think there's that sort of that peace of mind there, that as long as he's healthy, we sort of know what's going to be. Speaking of quarterbacks who are healthy, and I guess speaking of dual threat quarterbacks, Kyler Murray has been a big, big mover despite losing Marquise Brown. This just, Dwayne, feels sort of like a market correction that we didn't see Kyler for most of last year. And what we saw wasn't bad. This just feels like the market sort of correcting itself and getting Murray to a spot where he probably belonged in the first place.
I agree. And I think people are also baking in that it's Marvin Harrison or Malik Nabers is going to be on this team. Worst case, they trade down. They have put out, you know, they've sent out, you know, the smoke signal, at least. We don't know for sure if it's real or not, but they are willing to move. So if they do move down, like, worst case, like, maybe it's Romo Dunze, right? Mm-hmm. It depends on how far they move down. But I do believe a lot of this is baked into people think, we'll talk about Marvin Harrison Jr. here. I feel like we talk about Marvin Harrison Jr. on every show, but the steam is not stopping on Marvin Harrison's son, the junior Marvin Harrison. Yes. I think a lot of people are baking that into Kyler here. And we're going to talk about another Cardinal later in the tight end section. But I think once you put those two things together, like, they're all big movers. But Kyler Murray, again, it's back to the dual threat thing. You start looking down the board and you're like, okay, this thing's kind of not like the others. This is a guy that could run for 750 yards and throw for 4,500. Like, there's potential for Kyler Murray to do that. You look below him, like, Brock Purdy can't do that. Justin Herbert can't do that. Right. Tua can't do that. So I think that's part of, it's the archetype thing. You know, you start looking at, okay, when you hit the nuts ceiling for a player, Kyler's is still in the top three. Like, if he hits his nuts ceiling and everything goes right for him, rushing and passing, like, he could be the QB1 overall. Are we predicting that he's going to be that? No, but he has a better chance than a lot of these other guys because he is so good on the ground. And then I think people are just baking into the fact that, you know, Arizona was pretty competitive last year for not being a very good team, and they should be an improved team now. So given all the draft capital they have and the moves that they're probably going to make, you know, on draft day, I think they're going to come out a better team. So yeah, he's up 10 spots. So he's now the QB10 overall for Kyler Murray. And I agree with that. That's another one that we outlined back in February as being someone that you probably wanted to get on then.
Yeah, definitely. You know, the thought that he was QB20 is sort of wild to me, but I think everybody looked around and said the same thing. Being QB20 is sort of wild. We should, you know, probably go get him.
He's past Purdy and Herbert. So yeah. Those are the two guys he's jumped over.
Which makes a lot of sense. Speaking of which, Justin Herbert down big. He's moved down 24 spots. Not really a surprise.
Nah.
You know, when you figure that right now, he doesn't have anybody to throw the football to. I mean, I expect that will change, but that's the situation right now. Kirk Cousins moving up, going from Minnesota to Atlanta. Everybody excited about what that Falcons offense can be. Another guy who's moved up a lot, Jaden Daniels, who has been an interesting talking point. Look, we're all pretty much agreed that Caleb Williams is going number one. After that, there's a lot of discussion. Does Drake May go number two? Is it Jaden Daniels? J.J. McCarthy has suddenly entered the chat for being potentially a top three pick. I don't know how true that is or if that's just a draft season smokescreen. Whatever, though, people are big on Jaden Daniels. From your perspective, is this a skills thing or is this a potential landing spot thing?
I think it just comes down to the skills thing. Once you look past Kyler Murray and you look for someone that could give you 750 rushing yards, right? Like, he's it. I think Jaden Daniels is the next dude, unless Justin Fields wins the starting job right away in Pittsburgh. Like, I think those are your guys. So I think with Jaden Daniels, he's another guy like we were ahead of when we had this pod back in February, and it was all just because of this. And he's moved up 14 spots. So people have just realized that he really is a true dual threat kind of guy. And the thing is, if he gets drafted that high, he's going to get his opportunity, Marcus. And even if he stinks, we have seen quarterbacks that can run stink as passers and still be really good in fantasy. I remember when people were fighting back in the day to get Tim Tebow. I remember people going nuts that they got to put, you know, Taysom Hill in their lineup. So it's one of these things where we've seen guys not be great passers and they can still come up big time in fantasy if they can run the ball. So Jaden Daniels, probably a better passer than easily a better passer than both of those guys. But I just give the point because it's like, even if he stinks as a passer, as a rookie, like, he's going to score a lot of fantasy points as a runner, right? He's going to be able to use his legs.
Yeah. And I think that is sort of the reason people are big on him. I know that, you know, for dynasty folks, I think Daniels right now is one of the leaders when it comes to being drafted as a quarterback, just because at least in the first year, you have a decent idea of what he can provide for you in terms of fantasy production. Will Levis, we talked about this last week. He is moving up as well. He's up 27 spots. He's your QB 26. Look, they go out to get Calvin Ridley. They add Tony Pollard to go along with Tyjae Spears and DeAndre Hopkins. So definitely the optimism arrow pointing upwards for Will Levis. Over to running backs. What are the big macro trends you've taken away from running back ADP right now?
Yeah, so like if we look at it versus 2023, like I think of it as like it's all or nothing. You're either going in on a very early running back or you're really going to be even more willing than ever to wait. So the top running backs one through running back eight, are up on average 3.9 picks, and all of them are up. So again, not averaging in. The way I chose most of these breakpoints is I was seeing some very consistent data like, look, everybody in this band is up or down. But then when you look at the running back twos, Marcus, they're going way later. And what the market is telling us right now, the running back twos start at running back nine, not at running back 13. And those guys are down 11 picks from where they were last season. The running back threes are also going later. So running back 23 to running back 36 is the way the market is looking at this right now. Those guys are down five picks versus where they were in 2023. And then if we just kind of look at all the rest of the running backs glommed together, they are also down 6.4 picks. So you've got the very top guys up 3.9 picks, and then you've got down, down, down. So the market is really saying, okay, you either get this elite running back or we're going to be more willing to wait. Because there's so much variance at the position. We have all these guys that are older. You know, are we really that convinced about them? And then if you want to just isolate down to what we're seeing in the trends versus what we saw in February, the rookies are climbing. And we see that every time this year. Guys, if you are going to draft early in February, early March, you want to be drafting the rookies because those are the guys that are going to move the most. They're going to move the most up. We'll highlight a few of them here as we walk through these guys. And then the other thing, which we hit on a lot of these last week, you know, we went through the view of, hey, here's Dwayne, where Dwayne's moving these guys in his ranks. Well, now this is more the market view on where things are. You're going to see some big movers from free agency because, you know, we just haven't had a class like this, Marcus, where they all actually end up being free. I'm not saying they're all still elite talents, but I mean, think about it. Josh Jacobs, Derrick Henry, we went through it last week. There's a lot of guys that landed in really good spots where it looks like they're going to get the majority of the work. So the market is reacting.
Yeah. And you talk about, you know, the running backs at the top that are going a little bit earlier. I mean, obviously Christian McCaffrey, very much, I think, in the conversation, if not the consensus, to be the number one overall pick in a lot of leagues. People excited about Breece Hall, people excited about Kyren Williams, and people excited about Bijan Robinson. We talked about the Kirk Cousins going to Atlanta, what this means for Drake London, Kyle Pitts, et cetera. Let's not forget, Dwayne, Bijan's going to catch the football a lot too, on top of being just a very talented, explosive runner. I mean, I know there wasn't a lot of room for him to move up, but nonetheless, we have found room for him to move up in ADP.
Yeah. And when you look at it from a percentage standpoint, like, it's still a very big move, because when you're already, you know, Bijan was at pick 9, whenever we talked about this in February, well, now he's at pick 5.5. So he's moved up 3.6 spots. Well, if we do that as a percentage, like, he's up over 30%. That's a big climb. He's now going ahead of Justin Jefferson. He goes ahead of Breece Hall. He's going ahead of Amon-Ra St. Brown. He's nestled in right behind Ja'Marr Chase. So people are willing to take Bijan Robinson sometimes, you know, as high as in the top 2 or 3 picks. And I'm not against it, man. Like, you've got Zach Robinson coming over. We've seen some great running back schematics, like, for guys that have come out of that Sean McVay tree. We had Todd Gurley go off. You guys know Kyren Williams. We've seen Cam Akers even for stretches. We've seen Daryl Henderson get huge workloads over stretches. So I think the Tyler Allgeier impact is going to be less this year. We've got Arthur Smith, thank God, out of the way. And now you had Kirk Cousins. I mean, so the offense, the ceiling is clearly higher for how often they're going to be able to get the ball into scoring position. And that's going to be Bijan Robinson quite often. We're not probably going to have to worry about the damn Jonnu Smith end around twice in one season inside the 5-yard line. Jonnu only scored on one of those guys, but I keep track of it. He got 2 carries inside the 5. Those will all be going to Bijan. So I think this is fine. You've got an elite running back, absolutely in his youth, in his prime, on an offense that should be way better. I'm not surprised at all. And I agree with the market. I think I'm fine taking Bijan anywhere as high as 3rd overall.
Yeah. I think I was doing a mock draft and I took him number 2. I was like, I kind of going back and forth between he and Breece Hall, but I think just kind of to make the point of how much I feel about Bijan Robinson, I made him at number 2.
I feel slightly less risk with Bijan than I do Kirk Cousins. And maybe that's wrong. Yeah. Like, really, we have 2 quarterbacks coming off Achilles injuries. But I mean, Aaron Rodgers is a little bit older, but maybe I'm baking that in too much, but I'm with you right now. I would rather click on, look, I love both of those guys, but I do slightly lean to Bijan, and they both have great rushing and receiving profiles. So I don't know, maybe I need to think about that one a little more, but yeah. I'm with you. I'm with you. I feel a little better about clicking on Bijan than Breece, and I like both. What are your thoughts on those two?
No, I like both of them too. Maybe it's more recency bias, right? Because the Falcons more recently made their big moves to bring people in. And so maybe there was just some excitement about that. But I don't know. I think what we saw out of Bijan last year, considering how bad the quarterback play was, and I guess you could say the same thing about Breece Hall too. It made me excited for what this could be. Throw in the fact that Arthur Smith is in Pittsburgh. It just feels like there are more things that are different and we like different and exciting. Whereas in New York, everything's mostly going to stay status quo, except they get, you know, their quarterback back. So I think that's the reason, but it is a flimsy reason, I will admit, and I could be swayed the other way, but for now, I'm team Bijan. By the way, when you're talking about Jonnu Smith, I think you forgot was it the Mykole Pruitt throw to Jonnu Smith, or was it the other way around?
God. Yes. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, we can keep playing the hits here. The Arthur Smith, the oldies but goodies.
Let's see, some other guys who have moved. Josh Jacobs, we talked about last week. He moves up, no surprise, going from Vegas to Green Bay. Derrick Henry, obviously a big mover now that he is in Baltimore and in the backfield with Lamar Jackson. Meanwhile,
I'll say, hey, on those two, they did move up. What's interesting is you talked about the market dynamics earlier of the quarterback. Like, maybe we tested the heights of them last year. you know, we do get these news cycles. So Josh Jacobs, he's in the top. He's at pick 38 now, so he's up 17 picks. But he's down three spots over the last week. So it feels like the market tested a high for Josh Jacobs, and now it's settling in. Then the same thing happened for Derrick Henry. So even though he's up to running back 11, he's up 20 picks overall. He's pick 43. He's down four spots over the last week. So it feels like the market kind of found its spot for these guys. We'll see where they settle in. But they tested a high, and now drafters are like, getting a little expensive. There are still question marks around these guys. Let's not get carried away. So they'll probably settle in around where they are now.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the case there as well. Otherwise, a trio of guys who moved down: Rashad White down 19 spots, James Cook down 8, Isaiah Pacheco down 23. And it sounds like that has you a little bit baffled right now, Dwayne.
Well, I think it's interesting. I was lower than consensus on all of these players already, so that's part of it. But I am kind of surprised because the news hasn't been bad for these guys. Like, so all of these guys avoided Josh Jacobs, Derrick Henry, Saquon Barkley, Austin Eckler, you name it. They avoided any of those guys joining their backfield. And this is not a great draft class. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Like, I look at it, these guys were all kind of, maybe there's recency bias. All of these teams were in the playoffs, Marcus. And maybe early on, people were just, I just saw this guy. I just saw this guy. This guy won me a parlay bet. I don't know what the case was. And now drafters are settling in. So these are more in line, like, with where I have these guys ranked overall now. But yeah, RB 12, 13, and 14 for Rashad White, James Cook, and Isaiah Pacheco. Yeah, I feel like the news has been good for these guys so far. They're probably going to have a pretty clean run out, considering, you know, where we are. Are there any of these guys that you just feel like are overly too low, or are you just more happy that, hey, I'll just take the discount?
No, I think I'll just take the discount, honestly, on all of them. I think they're priced about right. I guess the curious thing for me with Rashad White is, do they continue to use him the way they did in the latter part of last year? When, yeah, look, we talked about this. At some point, the Bucs decided we can't run the ball, so we're just going to give you these short targets and use that as our running game, which definitely boosted his profile and his production. Do they continue to use him that way, or do they decide to go back to actually trying to run the football with him? In which case, if he goes back to being inefficient, then maybe that's, you know, a little bit too high. But I'm willing to reserve judgment and sort of figure out what he's going to be, and I'm willing to take him at that spot and seeing how things go. Let's see, some of the other guys who've moved. That's Austin Eckler down. Not a surprise, going to Washington. Brian Robinson is down, partially because Austin Eckler is now in Washington. Zamir White, very much up. I still laugh that the news was announced that Alexander Mattison was going to the Raiders, and everybody was still like, I'm not worried, Zamir White to the moon, which has to feel great if you're Alexander Mattison. Meanwhile, there are some rookies, who are moving up the ranks. Zach Moss, not a rookie, but he's moving up about 35 spots. But you're looking at Trey Benson, Jalen Wright, Marshawn Lloyd, all guys who are maybe some of the headliners in what, as you've mentioned, is not a great rookie running back class. And people have started to get excited about some of these first-year guys coming in.
Yeah, there are going to be opportunities available with some teams. So somebody's going to get the right landing spot here. And even if, like, it doesn't look like they're going to have that opportunity early, we have quite a few running backs that are aging, right? So there's going to be some of these guys landing spots where we're not super comfortable projecting a large workload for an aging back, right, over the course of a season. So that landing spot's going to go a long way here. But Trey Benson, he's up 32 spots. So out of Florida State, he's the running back 34 now. I actually had moved him up quite a bit last week in my ranks as well, because he had a really good combine. His production profile, which we'll get into that when we start talking more about the rookies, not necessarily great, but it was okay. And he's a guy where when you have a class that's not like great, and Jonathan Brooks is probably the best running back in the class, but he's coming off the ACL, I can see Trey Benson being the first guy to come off the board. Not a great receiving profile, but he has NFL size. He did well at the combine. The combine is really the big mover here for Trey Benson. So I think he's put him in a spot. He's put himself in a spot where he could be the first guy off the board. You're starting to see more mock drafts reflect that. And that's a big part of the move up for Trey Benson.
Yeah, very, very curious to see, you know, where some of these guys land. Cause I think that's going to be crucial for a lot of it. You know, I know with like a guy like Marshawn Lloyd, there's been talk that maybe the Chargers give him a shot, which would be interesting.
Yeah. He's up 52 spots, man. Jalen Wright up 93. He's running back. It's not super rich. It's running back 43, but 93 spots. That's a long way. Again, back to the, hey guys, if you're going to draft early, draft these rookies before they make all these moves.
Right. Before everybody starts to clue. Do it. If you could do it before like pro days and stuff, when all this information
starts coming out about them. Or the combine, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, cause you know, a lot of these guys did perform well at the combine, and that I think has a lot to do with why they are moving. So curious to see how much more movement some of these rookies get as we get closer to draft day. Hey, folks, the biggest tournament in college basketball is underway, and the action is just getting started. We've teamed up with DraftKings Sportsbook for the tournament, and right now, new customers who bet just $5 on anything will score $150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings app now and sign up using our code DEBRIEF. The crown is yours. That's right. New customers can bet just $5 on anything and receive $150 in bonus bets instantly. Stay in on the action. Use your $150 in bonus bets on DraftKings same-game parlays for a shot at an even bigger payout. Combine multiple bets together from the same game, including total points scored, number of rebounds by your favorite player, and more. Now, if sports betting is not yet available in your state, don't worry. You can still join in on all the fun with DraftKings Daily Fantasy and have the shot to win cash prizes. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. New customers, use promo code DEBRIEF, bet just $5 on any wager, get $150 in bonus bets instantly. That's promo code DEBRIEF, only at DraftKings Sportsbook. All right, let's get to the spot that I think is going to be really, really interesting, because there are a lot of names worth diving into here, and those are the wide receivers. There are obviously a ton of good ones already in the league. There are a handful that people are very excited about that are going to be coming into the league in late April with the draft. But your big takeaway so far from ADP trends at the wide receiver spot?
So it's kind of the opposite, right, of the running backs. So the very top wide receivers are going slightly later, and part of that is because if the running backs move up, some position has to move down. And well, the wide receivers are one of those. Now, it's not by a ton. The wide receiver 1 to wide receiver 14 are down 1.2 picks on average versus 2023. But the wide receiver 2s, Marcus, and the wide receiver 3s, they are going much earlier. Wide receiver 15 to wide receiver 38. Those guys are up 8.6 picks, almost 9 picks versus last year. And think about that. That's a wide range. A mid-range wide receiver 2 all the way to the late wide receiver 3s. And across all of them, the whole group, every single one of them is up. And on average, it's 8.6. And then the wide receiver 4s and 5s, those guys are down 1.1 picks. So going a little later, the very top, not by much, but then in the middle, people are piling on. So remember what we talked about at the running backs. It's all or nothing. You're going in on a running back early, or you're just kicking the can down the road. So when these people are kicking the can down the road, what are they doing? They're taking the wide receivers in fantasy drafts right now.
Yeah, I think, you know, again, there are those guys at the top, and I think it's similar to running backs, right, where there are a handful of guys at the top that you know are head and shoulders above everybody else. Then there are guys that you think are pretty good, but maybe not worth an early reach, but still worth getting in the fairly early rounds of them. And then there are the rookies who have been moving up quite a bit. Speaking of which, that gets us to Marvin Harrison Jr., and you touched on him a little bit. We talked about Kyler Murray, sort of similar to Bijan Robinson. There wasn't a lot of room for him to move up, but Dwayne, he moves up 8 spots. And now we are talking about Marvin Harrison Jr. as a wide receiver 1, where he's getting drafted.
Yeah, he's the wide receiver 10 off the board. He's up 8 picks since we started doing this in February. And I feel like even in February, we're like, wow, like this is a really high ADP. But when you look at his production profile, when you look at the school he went to, all the things, right, and the expected NFL draft capital, people are seeing the ceiling case as being, this is going to be Justin Jefferson's rookie year. It's going to be Jamar Chase rookie year. You know, it might not go perfectly that way, but the ceiling is certainly there. And so I think when people start to look at the guys going around Marvin Harrison Jr., they're getting more and more comfortable, which it feels weird to say, Marcus, but they're getting more and more comfortable clicking on, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr.'s name. So, I mean, it's like he's moved ahead of Deebo Samuel. He's moved, who's got a lot of target competition and a run first offense. He's ahead of DJ Moore now, who's got to have to deal with Keenan Allen in an offense that we don't know for sure how much they're going to throw the ball, going to have a rookie quarterback. So I can see why. I think there's also the fact that he's probably going to the Cardinals, and if he makes it past them, the Chargers are going to be very happy to pair him up with Justin Herbert. So he's got a really good landing spot either way. He's got two capable quarterbacks. He's got really wide open wide receiver rooms. Mm-hmm. So I feel like there's nothing to slow Marvin Harrison down. He was a great player. And the news, honestly, if you keep just stack it up, it's getting better and better. So I don't know for sure. I felt like when we talked about this earlier in the offseason, we're like, I don't know if he can really climb anymore. No, he's up 8 spots since then. So when I look ahead of him now, like, are we really sure he can't get past Nico Collins? I'm not sure.
Oh, I think he can.
I think he could pass him. I think he runs into a barrier at Garrett Wilson. Garrett Wilson, we saw as a bona fide stud last year. He just played with a terrible quarterback.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably like the hard cap, you know, on him. But I could see him still climbing a few more spots and getting ahead of Nico. And then overall, in the overall ranks, like, you know, some of these people just don't want to take running backs early. If you're a zero running back drafter, I could see him going ahead of Saquon, Jonathan Taylor. I could see him going ahead of even Kyren Williams.
No, I can see him moving up a little bit too, especially like once the draft hits and we know for sure where he's going to be. I think that that instant euphoria of seeing him in a landing spot is going to bump him up a couple. And maybe he'll settle back down a little bit, but I don't see him going certainly below where he is right now. I think the only movement I see from him is pretty much upward. How far upward we will see together, I guess. Davante Adams moves up 6 spots. And I'm wondering, is this because people I won't believe in Gardner Minshew, or they're just happy that it's not Aiden O'Connell?
I think people just came to their senses. It's like, okay, guys, it's Davante freaking Adams. Yeah, he's getting a little bit older, but all he does is go out and dominate targets every single season. So until he doesn't do that, like, he just deserves, you know, to be in the top 12. So I think it's just more of a, you know, there were certain guys that were going a little ahead of him. And some of that comes down to, again, who you just saw in the NFL playoffs, things like that. He had been, you know, obviously, if you're a Raider, you really hadn't been relevant to much of a conversation in a while. So I think people just having the time to step away from the season and be like, oh, you know, it's Davante Adams. And I do think a little bit of it's Gardner Minshew, because with Minshew, we've seen him at least be enough to support a wide receiver. Is he going to like elevate a wide receiver? No, but can he support a wide receiver one? Yeah, Gardner Minshew can do that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think maybe your point, though, is people just realizing, hey, man, it's Davante Adams. Like, what are we doing here?
What are we doing?
That might be the biggest thing there, the biggest issue there. Drake London, we talked about, he moved up quite a bit. The addition of Kirk Cousins has everybody excited. So 25 spots for him. Next up, a trio of guys that, as you mentioned, not much has happened, but these guys are moving. Deebo Samuel moves down 7 spots. Tank Dell up 6 spots. Jaylen Waddle up 9 spots. I got no explanation other than, I guess, they sort of just got moved in the shuffle with other guys moving up and down. That's the best way I can sort of figure that.
Well, and again, and there's this playoff thing, right? Deebo was fresh in everybody's minds. You know, and if anytime you get to isolation situations where you're getting to watch a lot of Deebo Samuel, like, you can't ever just not be amazed. Like, he is an amazing player. Like, what he does after the catch, I mean, he does things that no one else in the league can do. So I think it was just recency bias. People kind of were setting aside the fact that, well, he's got to deal with Brandon Ayuk, he's got to deal with George Kittle, they're going to run the ball a lot. Like, oh, well, who cares? Like, it's just Deebo Samuel. And now they're like, well, he's Deebo Samuel, but we have these other things. So I do think, like, there's a trend clearly here with guys that were in the playoffs moving down as people have time to step back away from the situation and breathe a little bit. And then you have guys that were not necessarily part of the playoffs, or guys that, you know, maybe were a little bit out of sight, out of mind. And now, like, you know, what we just talked about with Davante Adams, and people were like, oh, yeah, that guy was pretty good. Like, he's pretty good. And his situation got a little bit better. So, yeah, with Deebo, I think it's that. But then Tank Dell moving up 6, I think some of it is people realizing, like, the injury wasn't this really bad thing. It shouldn't really be hampering this year. So that's probably that one. And I'll just ask you, Marcus, like, if we had to pick for sure, like, which Houston Texan wide receiver we want to have, are we so sure that, and it could be both being canceling each other out, but I'm saying you're in a scenario where you've got to pick between the two of the one that you like more. Are we really sure it's Nico Collins? I mean, Nico Collins is going way. I love Nico, but he's going way ahead of Tank Dell. He's going at the beginning of round two. You got Tank Dell going in the middle of round three, sometimes falling to the end of round three.
I have been marveling over that this offseason. Like, I've been paying attention to that conversation, and I know a lot of people are very big on Nico Collins. I mean, look, our friend and wide receiver whisperer, Matt Harmon, has put out on Reception Perception, like, his view and how much he loves Nico Collins, and I respect the hell out of Matt. I've just been surprised by how much people are taking Nico Collins early, and that has sort of surprised me. So, I mean, as of this moment, because I like both these guys, my policy has been, I'm going to take the guy who's cheaper in drafts. That's sort of where I'm going. Because I'm not just sold that Nico Collins is suddenly this guy who's far and away going to, you know, eat up all these targets in Houston.
Yeah, and I mean, Harmon's right. I love Nico as well. Like, we were Nico supporters last year. Like, you know, we got some things wrong last year, guys. But we got Nico Collins right for you. So, hopefully you took him. But Tank Dell, if I had to choose... Honestly, I think Tank Dell's still the straw that stirs the drink in Houston. Like, when he was out there, I mean, Nico was good, but Tank Dell was amazing. They move him all over the formation. He gets, I mean, both of the guys get deep balls and stuff, but Tank Dell was amazing. And he did that as a rookie. So I'm not sure at all. I like both players. I think they should be going much closer together. So I love your policy. Draft Tank Dell as much as you can right now, because I wouldn't be surprised, Marcus. I think there's a potential like those two. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I wouldn't be surprised if we look up in August and they're right there together. Tank Dell, Nico Collins comes down a little bit. Tank Dell moves up a little bit. And now all of a sudden they're both in the middle of round two or at the end of round two. I think that could be a very realistic thing. So if you're drafting early, like Tank Dell, I think right now you want to buy the fact that he's probably too far underpriced versus Nico.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I mean, at wide receiver 20, I will take that versus where you're going to have to go to get Nico Collins right now. Malik Nabers, we talk about Marvin Harrison and how people are excited to click on his name. Malik Nabers is
You skipped Jalen. Do you have any clue on him?
Yeah,
I have
sure.
No clue on Jalen Waddle. Why? Now, I had Jalen Waddle higher than consensus by a little bit, but he's up 9 spots. Like, I don't know what's driving it. Like, did I miss something?
If you did, I missed it as well, because I really don't know why everybody's
coming to their senses. They're like, it's Jalen Waddle.
Maybe. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's just everybody's like, oh, yeah, hey, by the way, there is another guy there besides Tyreek Hill. We should get him involved, too.
Probably the running backs moving down. It's people just philosophically saying, we're going to attack the wide receivers in this range, and we're going to get away from Rashad White. We're going to get away from James Cook, those other names we mentioned, and we're going to just take the receivers instead. Because really, Jalen, like, he hasn't moved up a ton as far as his wide receiver rank. I think this one is more what you were saying, kind of the reshuffling kind of the deck just because of some of the other players moving around would be my best guess. But there's nothing like news-wise that would make me feel like, oh, God, Jalen Waddle's got to move up.
Yeah, not at all. Again, if you missed it, I missed it too, because I haven't seen anything about it there. As I said, Malik Nabers, another guy that I think drafters are feeling more comfortable clicking on. Look, it seems like Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be the first wide receiver off the board. After that, we can debate whether it's Malik Nabers or Rome Odunze. But Dwayne, he moves up 9 spots. It just seems like people, again, trying to get in early on the rookies and boosting that ADP right now.
Yeah, man. Much more to come on Malik Nabers. You know, we get into the wide receivers and the prospects. But I'll just tell you, like, off of all the early data work and analysis that I've done, like, Malik Nabers is way closer to Marvin Harrison Jr. than what I originally anticipated. And then when I watched the film on both players, and I am not a film expert, I would say I'm probably better than a lot of people watching film just because I happen to watch it a lot. And I try to study the people that are really good at it and see what they're looking for. But I really use a combination, right, of the data and the film. But just being very clear, I'm not like this film, you know, guru.
Right.
But just watching them, I thought Malik Nabers was better. Like, just more rugged, explosive, tough, plays with an edge. Like, Marvin Harrison is more like, you know, it was really pretty and everything. But man, there's just an edge to Malik Nabers that is not there with Marvin Harrison. And it's LSU, man. Like, yeah, they just churn these dudes out. OBJ, you know, we got Jamar Chase, we've got Justin Jefferson. I mean, this program churns out absolute studs. And now you've got the thing going around that's, he could go ahead of Marvin Harrison Jr. We've got, you know, Daniel Jeremiah, you know, from NFL.com. He's come out and said he wouldn't be surprised if that happens. We've got some really big, you know, film grinders out there that rank these guys that they're saying Malik Nabers is better. And when I first heard that, I was like, oh, this is silly. But then whenever I did the data analysis and watched the film, I wouldn't blame anyone. To me, like, this could be the Ricky Williams, Edgerrin James thing. Remember that? Mm-hmm. Ricky was so huge. And then the Colts come in and like, oh, we'll take Edgerrin James at 4. And then Ricky obviously, you know, goes at 5 and the Saints trade away everything to come up and get him, which is, you know, a whole nother conversation. But this could be like that. And you know what? I would not blame a team if they took Malik Nabers first. And here's what I'm going to say. They are both great. Mm-hmm. I think they are both great. I think whichever one you draft, you're getting an amazing player. But I expected Marvin Harrison to clearly stand on his own. But once I adjusted for quarterback play, for competition, for teammates, all those sort of things, they came out very close.
Well, and that's the thing that a lot of the draft experts are saying, that you know, the differences between the three of these guys really is incremental, right? And a lot of it might be, some of it might be personal preference, but all three, Harrison, Nabers, Odunze, all three really good prospects, really good players. And it ends up,
I think, Odunze is a tier below pretty clearly. I agree with what you're saying. Very good player. I think Harrison and Nabers are on another level.
All right. I'm curious to see, like, you know, will Harrison end up going first? I mean, that has been the conversation for a long time. He was going to be the wide receiver one.
He's still he's minus 800 right now. So yeah. I think he's still the favorite to be the number one. If I were betting this, I think the bet to make is putting it on Nabers having a chance to, you know, with all this noise. I don't know what his odds are at now. They probably changed a lot in the last week. But it might still be something bettable.
Yeah, no, it probably is, especially because, you know, he's not the favorite necessarily. So it's an interesting conversation. Amari Cooper down nearly 5 spots. Is this really the Jerry Jeudy effect?
I think,
or is there
so.
Something else going on?
I know. And then you laugh and it's like, well, Jerry Jeudy's never shown us anything. It was an amazing prospect. Jerry Jeudy was a very good prospect. Came from a really big school. Had a great production profile, broke out early in his career, did it against other great talented wide receivers on that same team, but it just hasn't clicked for whatever reason in the NFL. I don't know if it's something, you know, with just Jerry Jeudy's mental state, if it's something to do with work ethic. I have no clue. Maybe he just didn't click with the coaching staffs, and maybe it will work for him now. But I agree, like, Amari Cooper down 5 spots, like, Amari Cooper, we saw, I mean, at the end of last year, he went bananas, and we've seen him do that for stretches, but like, wide receiver 29? Okay, I'm good. Like, I'm good with Amari Cooper as a low end, almost a mid range wide receiver 3. Like, I don't mistake that for, oh, Amari's going to blow away expectations to be the wide receiver 3. But we know, Marcus, there are stretches of the season where he's going to give us big wide receiver 1 performances. So yeah, I'm good with this move.
Yeah, no, I will absolutely take it, because I still think Cooper is by far the alpha in this offense. And I think it's you know, it's Jeudy, it's Elijah Moore sort of battling for that next spot there. So I will take the discount as long as I can get it. We talked a little Romo Odunze. He's moved up nearly 10 spots, wide receiver 31 right now. Christian Kirk up 11 spots to wide receiver 34, 57th overall. I assume this is, you know, the removal of Calvin Ridley from the offense. Nobody's worried about Gabe Davis like eating into the opportunities, I presume.
Yeah, man. And I think if we look back at last year and the games where you didn't have all of the pass catchers healthy and Trevor Lawrence was really more or less forced to really feed the offense, there were just a couple of guys, like, that's when Calvin Ridley went nuts. And Christian Kirk has been a good receiver. I will be blown away if Christian Kirk does not outperform this ADP. I mean, he's going right now, pick 57. Like you said, he's up 11 spots, but still, wide receiver 34. You're getting Christian Kirk as a bottom end wide receiver 3. Honestly, if I had to say today, like, pick, Christian Kirk will be a low end wide receiver 2 or a low end wide receiver 3. Like, and I had to choose, I would say he's going to be a low end wide receiver 2. yeah. not a low end wide receiver three. What would you do?
No, I would definitely look again. I will take him at 34, but I'm expecting his numbers at the end of the year to be better than wide receiver 34, just because of what we saw from him when he was healthy, when he's been out there. He has been so integral to that passing game. And just with the inconsistency that is Gabe Davis, I just don't see any real big hit to his production as long as he stays healthy. So
yeah, Gabe Davis is not going to be a hit to anything or another person. So
yeah, I mean, I guess he still continues to be undervalued, which he moved up 11 spots and is still undervalued. So I guess there's still time to sort of get in at a pretty decent.
ADP. Again, the market's pretty sharp here. They're saying, look, Gabe Davis doesn't matter, but Calvin Ridley, what did matter? And mm-hmm. I think that's accurate. So the market's accurate. I still think Christian Kirk's too low. And we won't talk about it anymore, folks, because right. we like to get Christian Kirk as a low-end wide receiver three.
Exactly.
So hopefully you listen to this episode.
Exactly. Jordan Addison down 7 spots. Not a huge surprise, Dwayne. It feels like everybody still very much believes in Justin Jefferson. It does feel like there's a question about whether Sam Darnold or whomever the quarterback will be in week one can support multiple pass catchers. And it feels like that is where Addison is taking a hit right now.
Yeah. And even Justin Jefferson, you know, for where he was at, it's down 2 spots. Like, so it's, you know, considering the fact that Justin Jefferson was in the top 3, you know, and now Justin Jefferson's going, you know, off the board at pick 6.4, like even he's been impacted, but we didn't talk much about Addison last week. And I think your point though, is still really valid. I mean, are they going to have a quarterback that can really support more than one weapon? I think it's a major question mark. Like right now, Sam Darnold, no. Well, now are they going to trade up? Like that's the rumor that, you know, they've got 2 picks now in the first round after their trade with the Texans. And the rumor is that like they want to use that as ammo to go up and try to trade into the top 4 possibly and take one of those quarterbacks. So yeah, if they can somehow get moved up to 2 and they take Drake May, that the rumors are that that's the guy they want. It's Drake May, who's which makes sense. Like Kevin O'Connell, like I think he does want more of a pocket passer. I would say pure pocket passing. Drake May's right there below Caleb Williams in this class. If you want more of the dual threat guy, then like, you know, I think your flavor is going to be more Jaden Daniels. I think JJ McCarthy's a lesser version of Drake May, in my opinion. I would still much prefer May. So if they move up and get May, like I think you might see this kind of stop. But if they don't, and they're stuck with Sam Darnold, I think this ADP continues to fall. We like Jordan Addison. Okay, rookie year, but man, if it's Sam Darnold, like I don't really want a part of that.
No, I'm with you on that too. Like I don't know that Darnold can support multiple pass catchers. And I think even when you talk about them moving up, I think there's definitely, you know, you've got Caleb Williams, who is, you know, sort of in his own tier. Then you've got, you know, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, and I think if you're talking about JJ McCarthy as the fourth quarterback, there's a drop off there. That McCarthy has tools, but I think still needs some work. And I don't know that he supports multiple pass catchers in year one either. So that's one that would make me a little bit nervous there. Jackson Smith and Jigba. All things considered, Dwayne, I thought he had a good rookie year. He just had the misfortune of being on a team with 2 really established, really good wide receivers in DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. He is down 13 spots overall. Is this just people, again, sort of concerned that he can't necessarily thrive with Lockett and Metcalf in Seattle?
Yeah, unless they're going to change the offense and run 3 wide receivers more often. And the consensus in the marketplace seems to be that the Seahawks still want to be more of a run heavy team, based on some of the comments, you know, that we've heard come out from the coaching staff, et cetera. So I think that's hurting JSN. Also just front and center, Tyler Lockett, you know, signing that deal. It's like, oh my God, is it ever going to end? DK's on a pretty big deal that he signed not too long ago. So I think that's the other part, is just that you've got the new, it's back in the news that it's Lockett, and then pair that with the fact that, well, we don't know for sure that they would be willing to run a lot more 3 wide receiver sets. And it's like, how can JSN really win? How can he pay off his ADP? That's the question. It's like poker. You're in a hand and, you know, it's a really big pot, but you still got 3 or 4 other people in it. And you have to start asking yourself, like, how do I win this hand? Like, how am I going to win this? And I think that's what people are looking at with JSN. And it's like, you know, I don't know that this is a winning hand right now. Right. So I down 13 spots, man. He's down to 72. He's in a spot now where I'm more willing to take shots. Honestly, like I just didn't have a chance to draft him before because he was really down around where they've got him now. I have to look at my ranks and see how close I am now. But this is more of the range where I have JSN. But I won't be surprised if he falls even a little bit more than this, because we've got some other names that we're about to talk about that are climbing. Mm-hmm. And I think you could make an argument, at least for the next two guys, that they should be ahead of JSN.
Yeah. Well, let's get to those guys, because one, Marquise Brown moving up. We've talked about him. Now he is in Kansas City. He's up 28 spots. The wide receiver 41, still moving up. Deontay Johnson up 13 spots, right? He goes from Pittsburgh to Carolina. And I look at it with some optimism. I don't know if I'm as high on it as a lot of other people seem to be, but he goes to a situation where there's not going to be a ton of competition for targets. Yes, the offense has plenty of issues that it needs to work out, Dwayne, but it does seem like a lot of opportunities coming for Deontay Johnson in Carolina.
But it is interesting to your point. So the market is saying that they are much higher on Bryce Young, even though no one wants him in fantasy drafts, which those things don't always, you know, those don't have to go together. Like you can think of those two things separately. You know, it's actually a mistake a lot of times when you hear people be like, oh man, all four wide receivers are going, you know, in the top 48, I got to take the quarterback. No, not always, because not all four of the wide receivers are hit. We're just placing different bets on each of the four wide receivers. But when you look at Deontay Johnson, it is interesting because they're clearly saying that, well, now Kenny Pickett's gone, but they're saying this is a better situation than Russell Wilson, and it's a better situation than Justin Fields. And I think I would agree with that. We talked about it a little bit, you know, last week on Ian's podcast on the Questions Pod when he and I and Chris, and it was kind of like, well, if I was just forced to choose, like, would I rather have Deontay Johnson paired with Bryce Young, you know, or one of those other two quarterbacks, you know, Russ Wilson? Like, I would pick Bryce Young. I know he had a really bad rookie season, but he's got super high pedigree. He was amazing in college. And sometimes rookie quarterbacks have a rough first year, especially ones that are surrounded with not much. So Deontay Johnson, he's a guy that you're never have to argue with me about the talent. I probably argue too strongly for Deontay Johnson and his talent, but he does all the things we want. And the biggest thing being earning targets. And it doesn't matter who the quarterback's been, when Deontay's on the field, he's getting targeted over George Pickens, over whoever he's been around. And he's faced some pretty good target competition over his career at times. So I think it's probably also people just waking up to, okay, we were too hard on Deontay Johnson. Mm-hmm. You know, we took him maybe a little earlier than we should have last year, and now we were burned and we're pissed off and we're going to punish Deontay. We're going to take him late. But I think the market, you know, it's the combination of the two things. You got the quarterback change and people are a little bit better on that, but also it's just like, really, are we going to keep, I mean, he's wide receiver 43, man. Deontay Johnson has a top 8 wide receiver finish. And people were like, yeah, well, he had Ben Roethlisberger. Yeah. The same people that are saying that to me also thought Ben Roethlisberger was terrible the year that he supported Deontay Johnson, you know, as a top 8 wide receiver. So look, there's a ceiling here with Deontay. That's clearly there. Like I like him as a wide receiver 3, mm-hmm. but he could easily be a wide receiver 2 still, in my opinion, Marcus.
I think, you know, fantasy drafters have elephant memories where sometimes we maybe should be more goldfish with things like especially with guys that have that talent profile. And we know Deontay Johnson can get open. That was a thing that the Panthers needed. They didn't have wide receivers that could consistently get open. It's why Adam Thielen had the year that he did, because he was able to make himself available for targets last year. Been a lot of hype this offseason about Jameson Williams. He is up 15 spots. He's at wide receiver 46. The Lions, everything they've said publicly about him suggests that they are all in on him making the leap. And Dwayne, are you confident that Jameson Williams can make the leap?
So I was arguing for Jameson Williams at this time last year, mainly because he had been hurt. And how do you count a hurt season against a player? But now it's kind of interesting to me because, like, the comments I've heard don't exactly make me feel great. It's almost like, well, you know, we're hoping that he can be a full-time wide. What? He's your first round pick. You're hoping he can be a full-time wide receiver. Like, I'm hoping for more than that is what I'm hoping for. And he's not necessarily been great when on the field. He's given you big plays. They get him involved in the run game. He certainly can be a playmaker, but he's got freaking Amon-Ra St. Brown and Sam Laporta to now deal with. So I'm fine with this ADP. He's the wide receiver 46, just barely inside the top 100 picks. He's at pick 97 right now. So I'm okay with it. But man, Marcus, like, I don't know. when I put it all together, the comments, the team he's on, like, I'm not going to be like jamming Jamison Williams onto a lot of rosters. Like, honestly, I could also feel like I could easily paint a picture where he should be moving down in ADP. I feel like I could just as easily paint that picture.
I was very excited about him before he moved up 15 spots. When he was going a little bit later, I was like, hey, I can definitely take that shot on him, because we know Amon-Ra is going to get targets. Sam Laporta is there. He's going to get targets. You know, Jahmyr Gibbs is going to get some opportunities there in the passing game as well. And I think, to your point, like, we are hoping he can be a full-time player. Suggests that he's not ready to be a full-time player yet. So, you know, before, when he was going, you know, in the hundreds and he was wide receiver 50 something or 60 something, like, I felt a lot better about that shot. This feels like kind of not quite buying a lottery ticket, but it's definitely a little bit more investment than I think I was ready for with him. One other one, Xavier Worthy is up 40 spots. The speedster who put up ridiculous times at the combine is up to wide receiver 41. I don't know if you saw the pictures of Mike McDaniel shaking his hand, because that's what the Dolphins need, is more speed down there in South Florida.
You know, Mike McDaniel would love to do it too.
Oh, just, I mean, they are putting together a legitimate track team down there, especially if they go out and they get Xavier Worthy.
That would not be good for Xavier Worthy overall this year. But yeah, dude, I think the main thing with him is, like, running the time. Mm-hmm. He cemented himself as a, I think he's going to be a first round pick, worst case, early second rounder. He's one of these guys, if he doesn't go in round one, you can see a team trading up to the top of the second round the next day because they want to infuse some speed into their offense. Nobody has more of that than Xavier Worthy. And I will say, again, we'll get more into the profiles later, but very good production profile and broke out at a very young age. Played for a big school, played against big competition, not SEC. I know, guys, Texas is moving, but most of that competition, you know, coming against, you know, the Big 12, like, not the greatest competition, but still a big program. So, like, there's a lot of things to like about Xavier Worthy. He's not, what I'll say is, he's not John Ross. I hear people say that the 40 time. John Ross had one good year, and it was later in his career at Washington. So Xavier Worthy's got a much healthier production profile. So I feel a lot more confident in him than I did in John Ross.
John Ross also got hurt after running his 40, which might have been foreshadowing for how the rest of his NFL
career
went. Yeah, pretty much.
Did that hamstring ever heal?
I don't know. I remember at one point late in his career, like, I think when he's with the Bengals, he talked about moving to defensive back just because he wanted to get on the field. And then the first practice as a DB, he, like, got hurt there too. So it just was an unfortunate trend to his entire career that he couldn't stay healthy at all. Of course, we got to get to the tight ends before we finish up here. Your big takeaways in ADP moves from the tight end position so far.
Yeah, not surprising. The top two tight ends are down. So both of those picks are down 20 spots, but a lot of that is Kelsey. Kelsey's always been a first round pick. And then you've got who was the number two tight end off the board
last year? Last year.
Was it Andrews at this time?
It might've been Andrews. Yeah.
Anyway, those two guys are not going near as high, but anyway, this doesn't care about names. It's just saying the top two tight ends off the board last year versus the top two this year, down 20 spots, but from tight end two to tight end 17, Marcus, every one of them is up in ADP. So again, that big lull in the middle of drafts for running backs, like, basically all the other positions are moving up and to fill that vacuum, and tight end being one of those. And I think you also have some recency bias to last year. People looking at, oh, well, Sam Laporta didn't go in the top 12. The other thing is, we're talking about best ball here, and there's a bigger and bigger hive around the strategy that having two good tight ends can be meaningful, A, because of the injury rates, B, just because of the way the spike weeks can tend to work with those guys. So just because someone takes a early tight end, it's not necessarily keeping them from taking another, because a lot of people last year had success taking an earlier tight end, and then they turn around and took Sam Laporta and it still worked. Well, okay, but guess what? That tight end was Sam Laporta. So it's a chicken or the egg kind of thing. I kind of get where people are taking it. But a big part of it is that void at running back, where it's just letting other positions move up. Top 12 tight ends since February. So that analysis was versus 2023. But just looking at this year versus February, the top 12 tight ends are going five picks earlier overall. So the tight ends are moving up some.
You talk about that group of tight end 2 to 17 moving up as well. You know, there's, you know, this, we've all talked about this. There's that group of guys that could you draft them and they could finish anywhere from like tight end 6 or 8 to like tight end 16 or 18. So the good news is that guy you took in the later rounds, hey man, he could be, you know, he could be a top 8 tight end. The bad news is he could also, you know, barely be a tight end 2 for you. So good luck on that one. But looking at some of the guys who've moved up a lot, we've talked about the Cardinals, Kyler Murray, potentially Marvin Harrison Jr. Trey McBride is a name that is gaining a lot of steam, it feels like, in drafts. I mean, had a very good year last year to the point that he made Zach Ertz expendable in the desert. Look, with TJ Hockenson hurt, with Mark Andrews coming off injury, it does feel like Trey McBride's going to be a name that a lot of people are going to start taking earlier in drafts.
Yeah, up 29 spots. I have no clue how Trey McBride started off so low, because he was a name that finished out the year really strong. Now, the Cardinals weren't in the playoffs. So again, that's another trend I'm kind of seeing with some of these guys that are big movers up that weren't part of like the explosion for the rookies or the free agency. It's teams that were just kind of forgotten about overall because it's shifting. Oh, we're watching the NFL playoffs, the playoff race. Who's going to get into the playoffs? Well, the Cardinals were never part of any of that. But if you had Trey McBride on your fantasy team, you knew who he was because he was scoring you a lot of fantasy points down the stretch. But yeah, he's the tight end 3. Now off the board, and I'm 100% in agreement with this. Was a very good collegiate player, has the draft capital. Yeah, he went to a smaller school, but now he's shown us at the NFL level that he can do it. Marquise Brown has moved on. Marvin Harrison Jr. or Malik Nabers, probably one of those two, will be joining the Cardinals. So he's not going to be completely void of target competition, but I think it's something where you've got a good quarterback with Kyler Murray, and he can support two guys. So Trey McBride, I feel like just everything adds up for him to be the tight end 3. If you want to argue that it should be Mark Andrews, I think that is also plausible. Like, I think it's either one of those guys. Honestly, I would be mixing them up if I had to continuously choose between them. I wouldn't just always go Trey McBride over Mark Andrews. Mark Andrews has just shown us how good he can be, but McBride certainly deserving of the accolades that drafters are bestowing upon him by really moving him up the draft board. I think this is a really smart move from the market perspective.
No, 100% on with you on that one. So I'm curious to see if he stays at 3. I don't imagine he gets above, you know, Kelsey or Laporta. I think it's a good spot for him right there. Kyle Pitts, we know, is up because everybody's super excited about Kirk Cousins. Brock Bowers continues to move up. This is very much a skill issue. We'll see what happens when he finally finds an NFL home, but very much excited about his talent profile. Dwayne, TJ Hockenson down 18 spots. Not really a surprise to me. I mean, I feel like it's a combination of the injury, suffering the injury late in the year, and the quarterback change. I mean, we already said we're not sure if the situation as is can support two pass catchers. If they can't support two, then they definitely can't support three, and that's going to hurt Hockenson as well.
Yeah, I think once you put it all together, I don't really want to deal with TJ Hockenson this year. I don't want to take him at tight end 12. His ceiling's obviously not the same. Now, if they go get Drake May, that's great. But again, Drake May is not going to come in and throw for 270 to 275 yards a game, most likely. That's what you have with Kirk Cousins. And you've got to deal with the ramp-up time for TJ Hockenson. We're talking about a guy that might not be ready until the middle of the season, Marcus. And then once you get him back, he's not going to be the TJ Hockenson you were used to. So I just don't see a lot of reason to click on TJ Hockenson right now. Like, if he somehow slipped down into tight end 16, 17 range, then you could paint a scenario where, oh, he has this miraculous recovery because everybody heals a little bit differently. They get more than we would think of out of the quarterback. But until he's in that range, I don't see myself having much TJ Hockenson.
Best case scenario, according to reports, is late September, early October. And that's if everything goes right, you know, in his rehab and in his recovery. So more than likely, he starts the year on the PUP list. And as you mentioned, I mean, there's still sort of that run up to when he gets on the field and how healthy he's going to be. Dalton Schultz up 19 spots. He's the tight end 14. And Michael Mayer moving up 22 spots to tight end 18. Dwayne, who's a guy that I liked. I took a few shots late in drafts on Michael Mayer last year. I mean, it was, I guess, a kind of a typical rookie year for a tight end, right? Where he got some opportunities. He was sort of working his way in. He had a steep learning curve there in Las Vegas. But it feels like potentially this could be the year where we see Mayer maybe get a bigger role in that offense. Not a guy you're going to count on weekly in fantasy, but again, maybe a guy that you're worth taking a shot at late in your draft somewhere.
Yeah, Mayer's a guy that I've really tried to stay ahead of throughout the process. Now he's getting about to the spot where I probably won't be able to keep pushing him up anymore. But to your point, this was a guy that was really good coming out of a big tight end school. And Mayer was really the record holder on many different things at Notre Dame, was a target earner very early in college. And, you know, it was the argument last year was like, would Mayer be the first guy off the board? He ended up falling into the early second round when he went to the Raiders. But you also get Austin Hooper moving on. And Mayer really took over the starting role anyway down the stretch last year. And yeah, you've got Davante Adams there, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if Michael Mayer really becomes the number two target earner in the offense. And even if he's, you know, right there with Jacoby Myers, it doesn't take as much for us to get excited about a tight end as it does wide receiver, right? The bar is just lower because there aren't as many good tight ends as there are wide receivers. So with Mayer, I think that he's a guy that, again, like I said, I don't think I can push him much further up than where he is right now, but I would not be surprised at all if Michael Mayer finishes as a low end tight end one. So he's a guy I definitely want to be taking shots on in the range that he's going right now. I made a point to have him in my top 150. So this is a guy that he'll probably continue to move up a little bit more, but the profile is just, it's perfect. Like, this is the kind of guy that you really want to target, especially right now, because I think the price is still fair.
Yeah, I think definitely think it's still fair. Curious to see how people continue to feel about him and whether or not his profile or his ADP changes.
Like, if something happened to Davante Adams next year, knock on wood, we would never want that to happen.
Right.
But he could be the Trey McBride of next year. You finish the season out and you're like, whoa, you picked up Michael Mayer, you won your fantasy championship, or you were suddenly had a major edge at tight end that helped you get to the fantasy championship. So that would be like the kind of scenario that could play out for Mayer.
Yeah, 100%. So keep an eye on that as we get further into the summer. That was a lot to go through. We got through a good chunk of it. For folks out there, what anything new coming from you over at Fantasy Life?
Rookie supermodel stuff is all in the works, folks. So I've been working on the data, the model, the analysis for the last 3 weeks. I'm in the process of writing up rookies right now. Tweaking a few final things. So yeah, we're about to be into that mode. We'll hit the wide receivers, tight ends, running backs. We'll get through all of them, Marcus, but super excited about that. You know, it's always nice. You know, we talked about early in the show, like that, how you enjoy the different parts of the season. Well, this is part of the year where I really get to dig in and research and ask questions and, you know, try to figure out better ways to do things, research things that may matter, may not matter. Hey, I spent a lot of time researching a lot of things. I'll be frank with you guys, that I went down the rabbit hole based on some early indicators in the data and they end up being nothing, but that's okay. Like, that's kind of the fun, you know, like I used to go fishing with my dad and of course I loved it when we were catching fish all the time, but there were times we'd go, we didn't catch that many, but that made it when we did catch the fish, Marcus, that much even sweeter. So that's kind of how I look at this data mining work that we've got to go through as we refine our process and try to find new edges for the folks listening.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So be sure to tune in for those. We'll be having those coming up in the next few weeks, too, as we get a little bit closer to draft day. By the way, if you're over at Fantasy Life reading all this content, be sure to sign up for the newsletter in case you haven't already. It is free, and it comes to your inbox every single morning. So that'll do it, though, for this edition of the Utilization Report Debrief. Shout out to James Lynch for putting this all together and getting us up and making us look and sound like we know what we're doing here. For Dwayne McFarland, I'm Marcus Grant. We appreciate you hanging out with us. Enjoy the week, everybody, and we'll talk to you again soon.